if they're lying to people, we need to know about it. I mean, that's what we're finding anyway. But the more evidence we acquire, the better. And I guess the other thing that you brought to my attention yesterday, Brownies. Laura.
Before we talk about the Brownies, I wanted to say a couple of things about the last phone call, the guy that you were talking to.
Yeah, Brian from the Rascals up at UCSC.
I remembered the one speaker at City Council saying that we were a well-organized minority.
Tuesday Council, yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, I'm feeling like we're so disorganized, but we're working anyway. I think we're far from a well-organized minority.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing that struck me about that is that I don't understand. I don't have any faith that people that are not in our situation, homeless or poor, close to being homeless. How do I phrase this? I just don't understand why it is that are they waiting until we're a well-organized majority? It sounds like that's what they're saying, is that you have to be, the majority of the people have to be oppressed before.
No, what they're saying is that because it seems such overwhelming sentiment, because it seems such an obvious thing, you've got to let people sleep somewhere, and because this has not been considered by the City Council, that one of their ways to discredit it is to call it simply a special pleading, special interest comment from a small group of well-organized people.
Well, just because we're small, and whether or not we're well-organized, to me, I mean, I don't understand politics, because if our rights are being violated to such an extreme extent, and we have no voice unless we have 70% of the vote.
It's preposterous.
It's preposterous.
And I mean, it's clear to see that what's happening here is that almost any person you talk to, who doesn't have an axe to grind, when asked if people should be allowed to sleep somewhere in Santa Cruz, will say yes. I mean, there are some exceptions, of course, but that to me, I think, is a significant majority.
Lot of people are there. I remember when I was locked into this, you know, working 6 days a week, 10 hours a day, graveyard shifts. I was just making it through. There's a lot of students are really busy. It's great the students get more involved than the rest of us. But for the most part, people are just trying to feed their kids and make it through all the doctor's appointments. You know, I mean, everybody's busy. They don't have time to get involved in politics. So I don't think that the people that are speaking are representative of the whole community by far. And it was under my impression, which obviously I'm wrong, that the city councilists, they've been given the power and the authority to make these decisions, not, I thought, which obviously I'm wrong, but not based on the majority of people who have the time to actually come and talk to them, but what is right. For especially when it comes to a basic civil right, a basic biological
function. Well, in this case, those two groups coincide. Almost everybody who's talked to City Council publicly, at least at the council meetings, with a few exceptions, I'd say 85 to 90% have favored significant change in the current sleeping ban law that would allow people the right to sleep somewhere. And so that happily coincides with human rights. What it doesn't coincide with is the opinion of people in positions of power like the Downtown Association, the Chamber of Commerce, the Harvey West Association, the Police Department, and so forth.
Okay, here's another question for you. I had a few people who are older than me tell me that this reminds them quite a bit of the Black Civil Rights Movement, that a lot of the same kind of phrases even are being used, and the same sentiment is being used. And it makes me wonder, too, how does the Black community in Santa Cruz, have they responded in any unified way, or is there any sentiment from especially like kind of older Black people that maybe experienced some of this before?
The Black community is a really small minority in Santa Cruz. It's there, but
yeah.
it's about the same size as the homeless community, I suppose. And it's the people I've found. I have not found an African American or Black person who has said keep the sleeping ban. I've just not found that. On the other hand, when you go to organizations like the NAACP, they don't support you, you know, because they are concerned with pleasing the city council, and they're worried about, this is my interpretation anyway, they're worried about, you know, keeping their good graces and their good contacts. Even somebody like Pat Clark, who was one of the earliest people And then he didn't come out very early, I can tell you, but that we came out, if you consider last year's election campaign, fairly early in saying he favored ending the sleeping ban.
Uh-huh.
He was one of the candidates running.
I remember.
He has not been involved in any of the protests. He has not spoken at city council. I have not seen any statements from him or any public demands that the sleeping ban end.
Uh-huh.
It seems that this is sort of a political thing, and that, I think, is how Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar treated it. While it was there, they had to deal with it because SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network,
right,
supported ending the sleeping ban because of all our work. And also because it's the right position. Everybody knows it.
Everybody
there's no real debate. It's just a matter of getting past, it's like getting past the Southern segregationists in Congress in the early 60s. You have these people who don't want to give people human rights. They just don't.
Right.
There, and that's Catherine Byers, I'm sorry to say.
No doubt.
And
no
Fitzmaurice,
doubt.
Right now, are two of those people. And I also have to include Sugar and Crone, because even though they make these gestures at the council meetings,
you know what I think
they aren't
about
doing
them.
It. You know?
I think that my impression, especially of Crone, but I was a little surprised by Sugar, because I wasn't too impressed with him before the election. But I think that their heart and their conscience are, itching. And, I mean, I think that they really would if they could do the thing, but I think it's a political backbone and experience that they don't have.
Well, no, I can't agree with you. I mean, I understand that's an argument I've heard, but I think that they know more about these issues now than probably most anybody in town, or they should.
Well, it's that same thing that you're talking about, wanting to be pleasing.
I'm not really interested in the psychology of these guys. I'm
interested.
Yeah,
okay. Well,
I mean, that's up to their moms and their psychotherapists. They can talk. They can talk to them about that.
All right. I'll get off my mom's soapbox.
We elected them to do something, and they're not doing it. We should kick their asses down the road.
Yeah.
I mean, and of course, people like Rodkin, Hernandez, Matthews, they're worse, and we should not forget them. I mean, Crone and Fitzmaurice get the heat because they came on with the promises. Rodkin never made any promises to change this. Quite
right.
The contrary. He has stayed consistently bad on the issue.
Right.
Same with, although there are some contradictions in what he said that have to be brought up. But let's get briefly to this other issue, because we haven't, you've complained about a long call before years. We've been going on this one for 20 minutes.
Right. Oh, God, it was driving me crazy.
But very quickly, I know you gave me a call yesterday. You told me that, my goodness, the Girl Scouts are in front of Palace Arts stationery with a table selling Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah.
Now, what could be wrong with that?
Well, it's against the downtown ordinance.
Which ordinance?
They're breaking the law. That you cannot solicit... two people soliciting cannot sit right next to each other, and there was four people, two moms and their kids, sitting all right next to each other.
Actually, that's interesting. You're talking about the panhandling ordinance. They weren't actually panhandling, although I guess you could say they were. They were trying to sell cookies.
Yeah.
And that is also something which we were told when Free Radio Santa Cruz did it with T-shirts,
yeah,
and we were actually sort of half asking for donations.
Yeah.
The police immediately came in, sold, took a gave tickets, picked up the T-shirts.
Gave tickets?
Yes. Are there two?
Okay, did anyone complain about the brownies?
Well, I did not complain about the brownies.
Oh,
I thought that my associate was going to do that. She chose not to, or wasn't able to.
Probably down there again today.
Yeah, well, I think anybody passing by the Girl Scout cookie should draw a police officer over and draw the attention of the police officer to these criminal...
No one has the heart.
Criminal Girl Scout cookie people. It's not that we're against
Girl Scout.
It's not that we're against these Girl Scouts.
We'll teach them how to respect the law.
In fact, exactly. In fact, we actually did a tape recording, kind of a boost for the Girl Scouts, though frankly, it's still not clear to me if the Girl Scouts exclude atheists and gays, and if they do, I think we should exclude them, frankly.
I think that's the Boy Scouts.
Well, I don't know. Are they the same group or not?
No, that's, from what I've heard, they're much more progressive.
Oh, good. Well, it's always very good to be progressive.
I know. I wish my son could join the Girl Scouts.
Well, I want to invite people to come on down to deal with this issue of the lying of the county sheriffs. I suggested you call 471-1121 to ask the sheriffs, can I sleep in the county, please, and where can I sleep? But I also suggest that you join us tomorrow, Monday, at 5 o'clock at Java Junction, where we will attempt to talk some sense into Supervisor Marty Wormhout, a probably impossible task. That's at Java Junction, which is at Seabright and Eastcliff Drive. And then the next morning at 9 o'clock, we're going to go to the Board of Supervisors on the fifth floor of the county building. That's at 701 Ocean Street, right next to the courts. right across the river on Water Street. I mean, water and ocean is really where it is. Come on down at 9 o'clock. Support the right of homeless people to sleep in the county where it's currently the law, but they'll lie to you about it, and they'll harass you anyway. I mean, come on, folks.
You know what scares me about that is they're going to go, okay, we'll just change the law officially.
That's a possibility.
Yeah.
That's a possibility.
Okay, I'm going to get off the line, but I just wanted to mention, before I do, I had heard yesterday about the Marines in Monterey are being trained in domestic warfare, and people are protesting, and, you know, I heard briefly about it, so I'm, like, just grossly uninformed, but I'd like to know if you know anything about that, and I'll get off the line, but maybe other people can
Thanks.
Assist with that, too. Oh, and also the fluoride issue. I guess they're going to fight it. They're going to try and make the state impose it on us anyway.
That's what Cynthia Matthews and her her band of merry medical folks want to do.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Radio Santa Cruz, you're on the line.
Hi, Robert. No one has drawn attention to the fact yet that one of our brothers and one of our sisters is going to be facing the death penalty within the next few months. I don't know if people realize, but Eddie Munster and Rush and Casper and Adam were all homeless. They were squatting in Boulder Creek.
No, tell us something about that.
Okay, in November, there was a murder in Watsonville, an elderly man. I can't say his last name. C-H-I-L-C-O-T-E?
Chillicote.
Okay. And these four individuals, one of them went to his girlfriend's house, was arrested there. Three of these people got a van, left the state, went to Florida. One of the persons, Eddie Munster, James Dotson, was shot by a Florida officer after he pointed a gun at him.
After who pointed a gun at who?
After Eddie pointed a gun at that cop in Florida.
Okay.
It was like, I don't know if it was Jacksonville or Gainesville or something like that, but anyway. They were brought back to Santa Cruz County. They now sit in jail. The new DA, what's his name? Ruiz or something?
Ron Ruiz.
Is seeking the death penalty on Rush, Kimberly Labore, and Eddie Munster, James Dotson.
Uh-huh.
And they will be entering a plea at 1:30 Monday, Department 3. However, the Sheriff's Department is arresting or kicking out of court or detaining anyone who nods to them, winks at them, bats their eyes to them, or any other kind of activity that they would believe that is communicating with the prisoners. They also, besides just being handcuffed and belly chained, they are imposing a stun belt on them, which is put on their upper arms above their elbows and is strapped around their chest, and if any misbehavior, they can send a charge of electricity to them.
Uh-huh.
And no one's touched on that yet, but they were indeed homeless.
Are these folks you know?
Yes.
And
No, I don't know them. There's also a thing, I never met them.
Uh-huh.
There's also a thing where anyone that has written to them or has received letters from them or any kind of communication or has been seen with them is being called into the Sheriff's Department to be questioned for grand jury. So I would not admit knowing them. No, never met them.
I see. Well, based upon your secondhand information, you obviously have a concern about these folks.
Yes, I do.
Do you know anything about them through your secondhand sources? What you feel that this is a miscarriage of justice? You don't think they're the guilty parties, or if you feel comfortable answering these questions?
I will not answer those questions because this is a capital case, and it doesn't matter what my sources would feel or think about who committed the crime. It would matter if they're going to get a fair trial. And there's been so much publicity in the papers, on TV. There was even a thing in the newspaper when Eddie had made a knife out of a spoon in his jail cell. It got searched. He's now being held in Q, and nobody can seem to tell me what Q is.
This is a Santa Cruz County Jail lockup facility, or?
You know how you have B and G and H and O and J? Well, there's also a Q, but I've talked to so many people that have been in jail for long periods of time that have never heard of a Q.
Maybe it's a special provision just for him.
Maybe so. Maybe so. But there has been so much publicity that I'm wondering if they're going to get a fair trial around.
And you know who their attorney is, so if folks want to, isn't there a support group
for them? Their attorney has changed. At first they used the public defender's office, and the public defender's office couldn't do it because they had conflict of interests, because they were having to talk to people that were possible grand jury witnesses that they had defended in the past. Then Kimberly Laboy got that really, really expensive attorney. What's his name? Metzler, maybe?
Paul Meltzer.
Yeah. And he quit her case, and I don't know who she has now. And Eddie has a private attorney also that the court has made take the case for nothing. But I'm not real sure who that is, but maybe by calling the jail, they could find out. His full name is James Edwin Dotson, D-O-T-S-O-N.
Uh-huh.
And Rush's full name is Kimberly, I don't remember her middle name, Labore.
Kimberly Labore.
Yeah, L-A-B-O-R-E.
Well, is there anyone willing to stand up for these people in terms of a phone number folks can call if they want more information about this? Or any suggestions on that score? Why don't you think about that caller?
Yeah, they could page me at
480-6662. 480-6662, and your name is?
Kitten.
So if you're interested in this case and you want more information, give a call to Kitten at 460 and give
480.
I'm sorry, 480.
6662. It's a numerical pager. It'll page me and I'll answer it. The whole thing is they are facing the death penalty. There has not ever been a death penalty that has been successfully argued in Santa Cruz County yet. However, they're thinking this might be the first.
Anything else you want to add, caller?
No.
Thank you.
Thanks.
My old man was a good old man, skilled in the molding trade. In the stinking heat of the iron foundry, my old man was made. Down on his knees in the molding sand, he wore his trade like a company brand. He was one of the Cyclops Smoky Band. Yes, that was my old man. My old man wasn't really old, it was just that I was young. And anybody over 12 years old was halfway to the tomb. He was loyal to his workmates all his life, gave his pay packet to his wife. Had a few jars on a Saturday night, yes, that was my old man. My old man was a union man, fought out all his days. He understood the system and was wise to the boss's ways. He said, if you want what's yours by right, you'll have to struggle with all your might. They'll rob you blind if you don't fight, son. That was my old man. My old man was a proud old man at home on the foundry floor, until the day they paid him off and showed him to the door. They gave him his cards, said things are slack. We've got a machine, can learn the knack of doing your job, so don't come back. The end of my old man. My old man, he was 51. What was he to do? A craftsman molder on the dole in 1932. He felt he'd given all he could give, so he did what thousands of others did. Abandoned hope and the will to live, they killed him, my old man. My old man, he is dead and gone. Now I am your old man. My advice to you, my son, is to fight back while you can. Watch out for the man with the silicon chip. Hold on to your job with a good firm grip. 'Cause if you don't, you'll have had your chips the same as my old man.
And that was Ewan McCall from his really moving album. He's not with us anymore, but it was the definitive collection. And we have on the line with us the also equally moving and moving around kind of guy, Skidmark Bob.
Hey there, how's it going, Robert?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good. I had a story that might be of some interest to you. I was talking with a friend of mine that is a homeless person trying to lift himself out by his own bootstraps, kind of like I am myself, although I don't have a bank account yet, although he does have, or did have a bank account, I forget which bank it was, but he has a job now, and he's working. I'm not going to give his name because I don't know if he wants
to. He actually has been on the air talking about this. He's talking about Dan Hopkins.
Right.
He actually talked about this, and he also spoke about this at city council.
Oh, did he? He evidently was trying to, lift himself out of poverty by having a job and trying to get a place and save some money, like, you know, you should try to do, people try to do. And he went to the bank and got a bank account. He used 115 Coral, where most of the homeless people use as an address or even to register to vote for and that kind of thing. And he was called away from his work back to the bank and was told that he could not use 115 Coral as an address for his bank account, which I found pretty absurd. So, in other words, he also asked, well, what bank can I use at? And they said, none. You can't use it. You can't use 115 Coral. So basically, homeless people could not, if they're trying to lift themselves out of poverty, could not get a bank account and be able to lift themselves out of poverty and save any money. So they're homeless people, if they work, they have to hold all their money on their person, which is dangerous for a homeless person. If they happen to be sleeping, they get, or get their things stolen. And so I think the city, in a way, the economic interest is discouraging homeless people from opening up bank accounts, and that way they'll shoot them out of, and that's another way to get people out of town as well.
Bob, you have a show. You used to do a lot of, and you still do a lot on police misconduct?
Yes, I do.
When does that show on for those who want to?
Well, I have a show on Friday. It's primarily music, but I do play different things. Like, I played an interview with John Malkin talking about the recent invasions of Oakland and Monterey. And I also covered the Eugene. There's been a lot of police misconduct going on in Eugene, Oregon right now, around activists. And most, the main people there are going after anybody that has an anarchist type symbol. Ever since this Nike protest that happened got a little out of hand back in October, the police have been investigating these anarchist circles and arresting people and raiding houses. One kid supposedly had a fingerprint on a sign when his house was raided, and parents had guns put to their head. Also, people have been pulled over on the street and put in handcuffs, taken out of the station, photographed very carefully of all their anarchist patches or any kind of, you know, anything that has to do with no authority or whatever. two women were put in handcuffs because they had photo IDs, and they were put in handcuffs because they refused to give the officer their social security number when they had full photo IDs to give the officer, which is sufficient enough identification.
That was also the reason I was taken to jail by Officer Butchie Baker back in 1990.
Oh, really?
Because I wouldn't give my social security number.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, Butchie. You know, so these kinds of things are going on. There's an all-out war against activists. I'm sure it's happened in other places, happening here. It's happened to me. You know, I was threatened my child being taken away because I looked in a trash can. And things like that, and it seems to be getting larger and larger, and it just, you know, people are trying to lift themselves out of poverty, people are getting jobs, and obviously, they don't want us here, you know, if we're poor people. You can only be rich if you live here in Santa Cruz. You can't even get a bank account if you're a poor person.
So one of your shows is Friday at what time?
Friday at 9 o'clock, and then I have a public affairs show where I play Earth First Radio, Making Contact, and Alternative Radio on Monday mornings, starting at 8 o'clock in the morning.
And the Monday show runs from 8 to?
8 till, I'd say, noon.
And the Friday show runs from 9 to?
9 on, all night.
So 9 in the afternoon, in the evening.
In the evening. It's mainly a music show, but I do cover some issues every one now and then.
Well, interesting information, and anything you want to add to this?
No, it just, you know, it just seems the fascist ball's rolling here in Santa Cruz, you know, and they tell us to get jobs, and we get jobs. You know, I'm trying to pull myself out of poverty, and I got a part-time job, but I'm also a single parent, and I'm barely staying ahead of the game myself, you know, and it's just really absurd that they would do that. A bank would do that, trying homeless people trying to help themselves, you know, helping themselves, as they always say you're supposed to do, and we go to do it, and then, you know, we get cut off at the pass. But that's basically all I want to say, and you're doing a good show.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye.
You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Lots of callers today. The phone number is 427-3772.
Hi, you're on the air with Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, could I talk for a moment off the air?
Sure. Give me a call back in a few minutes during a musical selection or during a tape. Should be happening pretty shortly.
Okay, sure.
All righty.
Yeah, another option for callers, if they want to talk off the air to me, you can leave a message on the Huff line at 423-4833, 423-HUFF. Otherwise, the studio line is 427-3772.
Hi, you're on the air with Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. This is the V-Man.
Hey, V-Man.
I just wanted to put a quick plug out there on your show that I have a show this afternoon at 3 o'clock, Rockin' the Boat, and I will be featuring an interview with a man named Keith over in Modesto, California, who was fired from his job this week for none other than backing and supporting low-power FM radio stations, and I have an interview with him that I will be playing at 3 o'clock on my show. So I just wanted to put that out there to listeners to, you know, after Robert's show, stay tuned.
How long does your show go for, Vinny?
From 3 till 5.
And any want to give us a brief update on free radio across the nation? I would be happy to give you a few minutes here.
That's what I'm going to be covering, actually. Part of a good portion of my show will be that. So.
Is there a sort of a 2 or 3 minute brief summary that you have?
Yeah, the FCC is, you know, obviously since they put out their notice of proposed rulemaking back in January, late January, has stepped up this wave of enforcement around the country. Stations in Texas, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Missouri have been issued notice of apparent liabilities, have been issued cease and desist orders. A few of them have been seized with U.S. Marshals. I'm going to be talking about one particular station that was seized this week in Texas, over in Canyon Lake. And, of course, San Francisco Liberation Radio has been back on the air for a little over 3 weeks now, have already been visited by the FCC, have been asked to shut down their operation, but have refused, and they're still broadcasting. So, the only answer for me, I think, with this whole notice of proposed rulemaking is that the FCC really is not hearing our concerns about lack of access to the airwaves for dissenting viewpoints and for poor people, and that we need to just keep putting more stations on the air. When a station gets shut down, we need to put 10 more up and keep the pressure on, keep this issue in the spotlight because they're not, you know, they're not addressing our real concerns, and they're setting up legislation to basically have just a lower version, a smaller version of the corporate broadcast system that we already have in this country. And
what are the proposed rules, Vinny, in a quick nutshell, that they're proposing, and why are they inadequate?
They've only proposed, they haven't really made any specific procedures yet, but they have called for anywhere from a 1 to 1,000 watt service. They want to put, they're already talking about auctioning off of the spectrum. They're giving us secondary status, which means, you know, we're not a primary service that would, you know, a low power station would be lower down on the rung, you know, the lower rungs of the broadcast system. And they're calling for so-called pirate stations, people that have not cooperated with the FCC, to not even be considered a license. So they're setting up this system for, you know, a smaller version of commercial radio. I mean, they're putting out, they want to have people to sell advertising on these low power stations.
Are we talking low power like 10 to 100 watts or low power under a watt, or
For anywhere from 1 to 1000. They've got three different things in front of them. One calls for between 1 and 10 watts, one's between 10 and 100 watts, and the other's up to 1000 watts. I personally feel that 1000 watts is too much. That's just like, I don't know. I don't think we need that much power to cover our communities, but some people in the movement feel that 1,000 watts is not enough or whatever, but they're the same people that want to make money off of this thing, and that's not what it's about. It's not about selling advertising to small businesses. It's not about that. It's about getting information out there. It's about community access to the airwaves that belong to us all, and it's about, you know, deregulating this thing, because we obviously can't afford a license. They're talking about a $2,500 fee for a low-power license, and that defeats the whole purpose of what we've been doing. You know, that's why have we been on air for 4 years in an act of civil disobedience? If you're just going to come out with these rules,
there will some who will say that $2,500 is far less than the $100,000 that was currently, or I guess is still currently the case until the new laws are promulgated, or the new regulations, right?
Yeah.
Of course, they're maybe the same people who said that it's a big change to let homeless people be arrested from 2 to 6 in the morning rather than from 11 to 8:30 in the Santa Cruz area. Although that particular provision was defeated by the city council, so you can all be reassured that you're going to be arrested anytime you fall asleep in the late hours of the night.
Yeah.
So your show is from 3 to 5. You're going to be talking about a man who was fired from his job for supporting free radio in Modesto.
Yes.
And how can people get more information about this when they are, you know, say at odd times? Is there a phone number folks can call who want to support free radio here in Santa Cruz, our free radio, or get more information about free radio in other cities?
Absolutely. Call our voicemail, leave a message expressing your interest. The number is 427-4523. Of course, if you are on the Internet, if people are out there, and everybody can access the Internet, the library has computers where you can access the Internet absolutely free. Go to radioforall.org, and that's a really good place to start to find out about stations around the country. There's a bunch of links to different stations. There's news, there's updates, there's all kinds of stuff. It's a really good webpage for the movement to reclaim the airwaves.
And you're going to be giving out more information at 3 o'clock
this
afternoon, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Vinny. Anything more you want to add?
No, I'm enjoying your show.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Enjoyed the call.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's just hot potato telephone today. I'm really glad we're getting so many calls. In fact, here's another one.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hey, it's Kitten again. Okay, for an address for a bank to use to open an account, is Drop-In Center has a P.O. box that they allow everybody to use for that. Uh-huh. However, I don't know what that box number is, but I'm sure if people call the Drop-In Center, they'd be happy to give them that information.
Uh-huh.
And the Drop-In Center is 457-1163.
457-1163 for the Drop-In Center, which had been under some attack last fall.
Yeah.
Any updates on that?
No, I don't. No, but I do know that they got a P.O. P.O. box last year for people to use as an address instead of using the street address.
And the phone number again is?
457-1163. And another thing is people need to realize when they're using the computers at the library that, number one, they make you get a library card now before you can get onto the internet. And number two is if somebody hits the back key enough after you, they can get what you were on. So it's not as secure as people would like.
Now, I understand also that they used to have a allow you to do a little word processing, but now they don't in the library. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, perhaps it's time for folks who are concerned about this to file their concern with the library, ask them to deal with those three issues, restoring some word processing capability. Do you know what the rationale is for this library card ID requirement?
So people won't get on the internet more than once a day for 1 hour a day because they say that people were jumping on two or three times a day, so some people weren't even getting to use it. However, if somebody does not have the dollar to process the library card or an appropriate address for the library card, it's just a pain.
Well, perhaps there should be a process by which the library has a card for people who are indigent and they don't have to pay for the card.
That would work, but a cold chance in hell.
Well, thank you, caller.
Yep.
It's that railroad of phone calls. Here's another one.
Hi there, you're on free radio.
Yes, you cannot use the P.O. box to get a bank account, or you cannot use a voicemail number. That's one thing they're very specific in telling Dan about. They could not use P.O. box numbers. You have to have a home address to get a bank account. So, just wanted to let you know that. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
Well, I think this is what it's all about, folks. Community radio, where people can actually talk to each other and share information. People who may not spend a lot of time in the same room and associate with each other much in person, but when it comes to certain basic issues, they are sufficiently concerned that they want to get together in a way that the entire community is helped, not just those of us who are in the dialogue, of course, but all of you out there who are listening to the dialogue. Well, we are doing pretty well here. We only have an hour left in Bathrob Spear's Broadsides. I'm your host, Bathrob Spear Robert Norse. I'll be wearing my bathrobe probably later this afternoon at 2 o'clock at the protest in front of New Leaf. As I said before, because of the... We may do a march, who knows? We may simply sit down and talk about what our next move is and see how we can start involving ourselves in different projects, because we spend a lot of time addressing ourselves to the City Council. I think we should continue to go back to the City Council both Tuesday at 7 o'clock when Council resumes, and 2 weeks from Tuesday when the sleeping ban issue comes back in a big way. Here's an incoming call.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hi, Uncle Robert. It's deadweight David Silva here.
Now, David, I don't want to hear that kind of self-deprecation on
the air. Not self-deprecation. It's what you call me, jerk.
Hey, that kind of abuse, of course, I love.
Yeah, I know.
So what can I do for you, David?
I just got home, and so I just tuned in your show. You're talking about, other activities and other things to do besides addressing the City Council, and I think that's very wise. It's obvious that we're going to get very little, if anything, out of the City Council. The one thing the Council can do is get the law out of the way of the homeless, and it doesn't seem willing to do that much. I guess taking the sleeping and covering up sections from rising to a misdemeanor is the beginning of the right direction, but all the rest of it is piddly changes. It's funny, I just came from Mass, and Father Marini was outside the church, and he grabbed me, and he says, he's pretty disgusted with the City Council, too. The whole Catholic community really thinks of the Council, this new Council, is really about nothing, not addressing the real issues. So Father Mike wants to get people together to a Vision Santa Cruz kind of approach and get as many people. I know there's been so many different little clusters and groups that have formed since Catherine's done this opening of the entire camping ordinance back in December 8th. And perhaps we do need to have a more of a Vision Santa Cruz approach where we have, all the resource people and all the people that are affected and a big community effort. It's a community, the homeless situation is a community, concern, and we have to come together as a community. The sleeping ban is a legal law human rights violation. The City Council can do something about that. The, the, as far as all the problems associated with homelessness, and of course it's, you know, definitely a class issue, but to come across class lines and work together as a community, we need something like a Vision Santa Cruz kind of approach. I don't know what we would call it, but not just another task force. The word task force is just getting to be just, you know, so obnoxious.
Indeed.
You know, from everything they were claiming, they were talking about creating a commission, but they kept calling it a task force. So.
David, I know you know, you've really, in the course of the last year, covered a number of issues, and unfortunately, because you and I both are having internet problems, so we haven't been able to get copies of the City Council agenda for Tuesday, but I did get a copy of the Police Review Board agenda for Monday, which I'm going to have to ask my producer to try to find. Actually, I may be able to, I think she may have brought it into the studio earlier. I just got to find it. But there is a meeting of the monthly meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board on Monday at 5:30 at City Hall. And
I'll be there.
I'm not necessarily, you know, I think it might be good for people to show up and talk about police misconduct there, not so much because the board is listening. It isn't, I'm pretty sure. Even, I don't even think the three new members are seated yet. The board, as some of you may know, underwent a complete change at the election time when, well, no, it's supposedly going to undergo a change with three new members appointed by the three new council members. I know at least one of them personally, Sandy Brown. I think she's a good person. Again, it's really hard for one person to do anything unless they're willing to be a complete maverick, which I hope she is. Otherwise, I don't.
And Arnie Left has some, you know, very good experience and
Becky
creative new ideas.
And Becky, what's her last name? Becky, you know, Blythe or something?
Yeah, Becky Blythe.
Is the third member. Unfortunately, of course, these three are pitted against the three old line conservatives, Lisa Rose and the other two. And the seventh member of the board is in limbo because council member Cynthia Queen of Mean Matthews is refusing to allow any vote on this issue by the City Council because she is refusing to nominate. What do you think should be done about that?
Well, you know, I think it's understandable that that Ms. Matthews has had her feelings hurt, that her sideways drug-in nomination of Christie was rejected.
We should say that nomination, David, was the guy who was previously the chair for the last 2 years that did nothing, particularly around the high profile.
Well, he did a few things. He managed to confuse the John Dine issue and make the John Dine incident even more muddled and confused and create a various, you know, have press conferences that actually created new versions of stories. He did a lot of damage.
It's true. He did do things, but he didn't do stuff that we would consider appropriate for a Citizens Police Review Board. And when he was not reappointed by, you know, because his appointing council member had been kicked off the council or left, he, you know, Cynthia Matthews picked him up to put him back on, and the City Council, one of its few good actions recently, said, no way.
And those people that are up, you know, she's refusing, those people that have put in, she's refusing to...
there are plenty of nominees, it's just she's refusing to choose
support
one.
She's refusing to choose one. You know, and the process was set up like the process is set up. She's quite willing to play the game, you know, when she wins, when she's in the majority, but when she's not in the majority, she just doesn't want to play the game. It's a real late hour for Ms. Matthews to be playing sore loser and bad sport. I think she owes it to the police officers whose careers and reputations are in limbo because there's things that can't be done with only six members. There's a lot of things that can only be done when you have the full seven complement. So she's putting victims who have complaints and police officers whose careers and reputations are hanging out there with indecision. She's putting all those people in limbo just because she's in a pout. Well, the young lady needs to get over it. The young lady needs to be a council person. If she's not going to be a council person, then she needs to resign.
Be recalled might be nice too.
Well, you know, there's plenty of there was plenty of talk all last year about recalling her because, you know, of her corrupt involvement with the Gateway Project and her bribe taking during the election and so forth like that.
And you're not.
She's never cleared herself of that, and I wish she'd speak up because if it's false, if there was nothing wrong, then she needs to speak up on that, and she never has.
Have you ever confronted
her?
She's
the police. Yes, I've mentioned it to her before.
What was her response?
No response.
No response.
Never had a response on that. Yeah. You know, it's one of those kind of things that sometimes, if you're in that position, it's best not to say anything. I can understand her, but it's too bad that continues to hang over her as a bought-off, corrupt politician that gave us the Gateway development that's
Well, a lot of them,
our town even more. They promised us that at least have false door fronts that look nice. And now, have you seen the signs they put up?
You know, I have never been into the Gateway Project.
I mean, just on the street, on River Street there. The facade on River Street, as you drive by, it's supposed to look like a nice sort of, you know,
downtown
look.
River and Highway 1, for those of you who don't know what the Gateway Project is.
Yeah. And, you know, and that was her pet project for the longest time. And so for them to have been given her campaign money was not too surprising, but it was inappropriate for her to then vote.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We a lot of us wondered if the whole Canfield business didn't have some corruption behind it, although I never saw any definitive proof of that. I do know that it did seem they were certainly development happy, the council majority last year, and we threw that majority out, and the same majority that came in is the one now that's refusing to deal with the human rights issue of the poor.
Well, you know, when we have a country and a social economy environment that is a Clinton-Ginrich bastardization, it's no wonder that it's pretty hard for anybody to figure out what's moral. But, you know, they need to step back from they're being politicians, and they really need to realize that we elected them to serve, not to continually campaign. You know, the election's over. You know, they lost. When the majority was in the minority, they were good sports several times. They felt that Celia Scott was not a good sport because she would not let issues die and be buried, and she would not allow cover-ups. But now, you know, they're not standing any kind of high moral ground where they're trying to prevent, you know, things from happening that are bad or even against the majority of the will of the people. They're protecting their own invested interests, and that's disgraceful. Mike Rockin perhaps is the one that has a principled position on this, although I really wonder what his principled position is when he's really pretty bourgeois. It's a class, you know, the sleeping ban is a class issue. He's a landlord. He has a landlord perspective, not a socialist perspective.
Oh, I didn't know he was a landlord.
Yes, he's a landlord.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I know that on Monday there are three meetings. There's a CPRB meeting at 5:30 at City Hall, which I invite people to come to, if only to talk about your own experiences with the police in something that becomes a record. Then I also, earlier at 5 at the Java Junction, Marty Wormhout's supervisorial briefing.
I think it's important for people to go talk to Marty. The county, in this whole process of the task force process on the review of the camping ordinance,